Chapter 1. Margot Holds the Moment. Who cares if it's children's theater? Margot is playing a criminal lawyer crusading for truth and justice. So would someone please tell her where, in what deranged fashion universe, a defense attorney would appear before a judge in a rainbow Harpo Marx wig and an obscenely short, hobblingly tight, iridescent purple suit? Margot arrives at the theater an hour early, since part of her preparation now involves a series of meditations designed to help her overcome the humiliation of squeezing into an outfit that her character, Portia McBailey, would never wear unless she'd quit being a lawyer and gone to work for an escort service, role-playing a slutty executive secretary birthday clown. Now, as she enters her dressing room before the Saturday matinee, she notices that the hem of the purple skirt has come entirely undone. The dimpled fringe of ragged cloth trailing clumps of thread will hypnotize the audience.
"Mommy, Daddy, why is that funny lady's skirt so hairy?"
Margot counts off 10 deep breaths so as to repel any negative thoughts that might otherwise collect around Lakshmi, the overworked, underpaid NYU Drama Department graduate student who is, the costume department. Margot had volunteered a thrift shop treasure from the back of her own closet, an 80s Armani pantsuit from her brief marriage to Enrico. It would have been perfect for Portia. But Roger had insisted on indulging his fetishistic attachment to the sleazy synthetic that morphs from violet to scarlet when it catches the light. Roger won. Roger is the director. Roger didn't threaten to have Margot replaced. Roger didn't have to threaten to have Margot replaced. Margot gave in to his blackmail, his mortifying demands, the fright wig and the hooker suit. Not until the first time she walked out on stage and the audience burst out laughing did she understand what Roger intended. How many hours has Margot spent in her career practicing entrances and exits for a specific effect? Until now, mocking childish hysteria was not an effect she'd gone for. But this is children's theater, not the freaking Merchant of Venice. The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven. Margot memorized Portia's soliloquy when she was in high school. She thanks and blames her drama coach, Mr. Blake, for everything that happened since. How disengaged he was, so irresistibly bored that all the girls adored him. What was that poor bastard's story? Margot never thought to wonder, and now she doesn't want to know. The quality of mercy is not strained, not even for a monkey. Lakshmi has lowered the hem twice, as Margot requested, begged. In return, Lakshmi persuaded Margot to tone down the fuchsia lipstick, which, along with her newly flaming pelt of spiky orange hair, she favors these days. Margot imagines Portia going for that look, confident, self-sufficient, but available, a brittle protective screw-you shell encasing a gooey caramel of longing. "Really?" Lakshmi had scrutinized Margot's lips, which the drugstore lipstick had turned a hypothermic purple. "For Portia?" So this is what it's come to. A note on her lipstick means that Margot is being taken seriously. She'd traded her drugstore Night Blooming Orchard for the Dior Dusky Pink that cost a chunk of that week's paycheck, the pathetic pittance for which, like the rest of the cast, she feels absurdly grateful. They are in this together. Everyone is happy to be here and disappointed to be here. Glad to have a part in a play, glad to work for scale, but truthfully not all that overjoyed to be working in an off-off-off-off Broadway production of Mr. Monkey, the umpteen hundredth revival of the cheesy but mysteriously durable musical based on the classic children's novel. The actors and the stagehands behave as if they've taken a blood oath not to complain, except for 12-year-old Adam, who whines because his monkey suit smells and he can't breathe. His stage mom, Giselle,
has told everyone that if Adam develops health issues from asthma-causing dust mites, she'll sue.